us on travel arrangements for the winter meeting and any information that you require?
Absolutely. So the winter meeting schedule has been determined, and we're going to go ahead and go with Monday, January 31st, from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. is going to be the basic science group only. So those of you that can get there in the morning don't have to come Sunday night if you don't want to, and those of you that can't make it by 1 p.m. from the West Coast can have a room Sunday night. And then Tuesday we're going to have a full day for CIFASD joint meeting between the basic science and clinical groups all day. And then Wednesday will be from 9 to 3. At some point during that time frame, it'll just be the clinical group, and then at some point it'll be the pass. But we're just kind of still waiting on passes availability. So there's a doodle poll that you've been emailed to let me know which nights you will be needing a hotel room. And if you can just have everyone in your group fill that out, that way I know how many rooms to get quotes for. And once I get those quotes, then I will send information on how to book those rooms. I think I polled from Sunday night to Wednesday night, but if you need it for Saturday night or Thursday night or for something unique, just add a comment on the doodle poll for that. That would be fine. And just to remind everyone again, the meeting's going to be in Rockville. So flying into any three of those D.C. airports, I think people have done in the past.
Is it going to be at NIAAA?
It is going to be at NIAAA. We have room reserved there, the same room that we usually do. I think it's the terrace. Is that what
right.
I don't recall.
That's
but,
right.
Yeah, Dr. Harold looked into that for us right away. And the past meeting will be there as well.
It's the dungeon conference room that lacks windows or cell.
Oh, I didn't know I was putting you guys in a dungeon.
No, it's actually, we're all very familiar with that room, and it's
okay.
Very functional.
So, Mike, you're going to take care of the wireless connection, right?
I will take care of the wireless. Unofficially.
Great.
Then just a word about RSA deadlines. We had a successful CFAS symposia both at RSA and ISBRA this year. It would be great if we could have another CFAS symposium at RSA this year. And I wonder if any of those people on have ideas about potential topics and members of CFAS who could present. Did a sort of molecules to man at RSA last year and included Rajesh and Elizabeth Sowell and Sarah Mattson. So we really covered a lot of stuff in between, Jennifer Thomas. And then for ISBRA, we had sort of more of the same, but it was more... more molecules than man. We only had three people. It wasn't really targeted as a CFAS symposium, but the representative from Poland who was going to do the imaging stuff didn't come. So Kathy Sulik did her imaging stuff, and I presented, and Jennifer, I guess, presented, and it was good. So you should think about it. I think especially these days, it's important for CFAS to publicize its accomplishments and to be a presence. It would be great if you could come up with ideas. There is certainly enough going on in CFAS that it wouldn't hurt to put something together.
And that deadline is just a month away.
Yep.
So it's December 6th this year.
December 6th. Great.
And while you're all writing down calendar items, the progress reports in the Roman numeral style for the principal investigators per project for the consortium will be due on January 3rd.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. I'll just say a few words about the ISBRA meeting. It was very well attended. They had planned it for 400, roughly, and I think possibly because it was in Paris, there were 600 people. There were a few sessions that had fetal alcohol stuff covered. Probably none of it was really new to people who are on this call. And I would say there were three different symposia that had fetal alcohol material, and then there were some posters as well. It was actually scientifically a pretty good meeting. To see if there's anything exciting here. Ulrika Heberlein, who does a lot of Drosophila work, had a nice Drosophila model for fetal alcohol and identified through mutational analysis IGF, insulin growth factor-like peptides that seemed to correlate, and she could rescue with those peptides in some of the mice. She was looking at just some simple morphological changes and also some behavioral things. And there were a few presentations on vitamin A, ALDH, which is not a new story. Those were the main sort of highlights of things that people might not have been aware of. I thought Ulrike's was the most novel of all of the presentations at ISBRA.
Michael, what's Ulrike's last name?
Heberlein, H-E-B-E-R-L-E-I-N. She's notable for having probably maybe being the only alcohol researcher to have multiple papers published in Cell.
Yeah, thank you.
Her work is always worth looking at because it's very well done, and she's a very rigorous scientist who also is, I think, extraordinarily creative in the things that she does. So maybe we can go ahead with progress reports. And Feng, why don't you start?
Hey, we are at this point looking at the analyzing the data that we have collected. The dose different was 3.6 versus 4.8, and the stage, which is the treatment between 7-11 versus 7-16. We have collected the data for microvidia, which is a taking the photo of facing a different angle with the 70 set. And then reconstructed for the measurement of the anisopometry. So this is we are closing to get the stage of data collected for the analysis. So I think by the end of the year, we should have this statistical data to finish up. And meanwhile, to look into the dose difference. For the postnatal ones, we have looking the micro CT analysis instead of micro video. That is taking the micro CT. That is a true 3D construction. At this point, we're trying to be creative to get the micro CT to have not only the bone, each individual bone to be analyzed, but also see if we can render the surface of the face. So this way, have double registered data set for different analysis. The two computer people that we work with us are looking into a way to get the surface to be constructed. So in addition to that, we have begin to look into individual bones, not only the volume, but also beginning to look at the their relationship and the shape. So other than the dose and the staging, we have recently get a set of interesting data that is the genetic background has a contribution to the difference of the outcome of the dysmorphology or the apoptosis, namely that the different lines other than C57, the 129, S129 is a mouse line that appear to be resistant to the alcohol exposure with a similar dose, and they appear to that without much of the apoptosis as treated as in the C57, and their other measurements, the brain waves, so and so, are not as affected as the C57. So there's looks like a genetic genotyping differences that's contributing to the alcohol damage. I think that's what we have so far to be part of the exciting.
Do you anticipate presenting some of this stuff or submitting some of this stuff for poster for RSA?
Yeah, I think we are planning to have these come out. Actually, some of the S129 line versus the C57 is actually was looked into in the alcohol the embryonic culture model. So they are actually without the effect of the maternal inference and simply just the fetal genotype difference. So that is giving a more close to genetic background differences. So yes, we will put it up and send out for journal as well.
Uh-huh. Great. Kathy's lab and my lab had been looking at differences in ERK phosphorylation as a marker of ethanol sensitivity. And I wonder if there's something worth looking at the C57s versus the S129s.
That would be very interesting. Are you currently, I think you're looking biochemically, is there something, the pathway marker that we can use?
So we've been using an assay for ERK1, too. And we found phosphorylation differences that paralleled sensitivity in our cell lines between the ethanol more sensitive C57-6Js compared to the 6Ns that your lab had typically used. And Scott Parnell had shown that the 6Ns were somewhat less sensitive to alcohol than the 6Js in the same ocular dysplasia assay. So we had shown previously that there's less phosphorylation of ERK1, there's a difference in phosphorylation between sensitive and insensitive, and found the same directional difference in the mice. And it might be interesting to look also across strains. 6J and 6N were interesting to look at because they're genetically so similar.
Right.
Yet they have this difference that was statistically significant. And we're just getting ready to write that up as well. So it might be worth looking at if you have embryos. You've done morphology differences at what days?
This is an embryonic culture, so it's in the beginning of neurulation, which is 8.2
yeah.
to the E10.
Right. To 10. Because we looked at 10 in terms of just assays, just to get enough protein to be able to do a respectable amount. We're actually planning to collect day 8 embryos, which we're going to have to pool and try to get data on ERK activity from pooled embryos. We were able to do individual embryos at day 10.
But did it in the E7?
So we haven't done E7 because we're not confident we could get enough material to do an assay.
Very small, yes.
But 8 will already be a challenge. 10 we could get individual data. There's a huge difference between 8 and 10, as you know.
Yes. The time point is very comparable with what we have done.
Yes. So maybe we can continue the discussion offline, but there may be something worth doing there. And of course, we're talking more broadly with the clinical group about genomic screening and whether to do candidate genes or more of a broad screen. but certainly had identified MAP kinase pathway as one to look at for screening based on these data and others. So it also would be an interesting way to integrate these projects with some of the clinical work that we're.
Yeah, that would be very interesting.
Tim, maybe you can provide your report.
Yes. With respect to our first DIFAST study, we are wrapping up the data analysis and hope by the end of the year to have a draft of a manuscript submitted. That manuscript, we're going to include basically all of the data. The only positive and very interesting data is the facial dysmorphology data. You know, we have cell count deficits, but the behavioral measures, we didn't detect differences. So with respect to the second study, which is the study that includes animals that are being given choline supplementation, we sacrificed the last animal from the 2010 season on Friday, and that's half of the animals for the study, and the second half of those animals are being generated now and they'll wrap up sometime about this time next year, and that'll be the end of the second study. Because of the lack of the behavioral result finding being able to detect differences in our behavioral measures, we added a 2.5 gram per kilogram dose on top of the 1.75 kilogram dose that we previously used, and this is the first study that we've used that high of a dose, and it appears that the animals are tolerating it very well, and it looks like we're going to be seeing BACs in the 350 range, and so I'm much more optimistic that we'll see behavioral deficits with that, because we saw trends at the lower dose. So I'm hopeful that the behavioral deficits will be there.
What were the facial deficits that were identified?
Okay, so what we found is that with using logistical regression analyses of the collection of measurements, that we could, with fairly high sensitivity and specificity, predict which group the animals were in, and it was no single measurement that was really diagnostic, though it was the collection of measurements.
So you probably remember during our reverse site visit, the question was asked, so what if you find behavioral abnormalities but nothing in the face? We said, boy, that would be really interesting because that would be a good model for FASD.
Right.
And what is paradoxical is that perhaps, at least at these lower doses, you're finding normal behavior but abnormalities in the face.
It's paradoxical, yeah.
Not what was expected, but you get what you get.
Yeah.
I think it's our job to sort of figure out what it all means.
Yeah, I'm not going to go out on a limb because we saw trending with the behavioral measures, but it is interesting, and it seems paradoxical.
Yeah, it attests maybe to the potential sensitivity of some of the facial measurements that you're making, and I realize it's an aggregate group of different measures that is producing the effect, but I wonder if maybe at the next dose you'll be able to identify a particular facial measure that could be translatable, that might be an indicator of low exposure over a long period of time.
Yes, we're really hopeful that that'll be the case.
And Tim, are you anticipating having something to present at RSA this year?
Well, you know, the most interesting material that we have to report at this point is this face stuff, and I did present it as a poster last year. It was, you know, we got that the results too late to be able to participate in the symposium last year, but we haven't completed the analysis of the older animals. Any day now, I'm expecting Leah to be finished with that. You know, what we presented at our RSA was just the neonatal measurements, but we have 2 month and 5 month data that's been in her hands, and hopefully any day she'll be finished with it. So if that's interesting, then the answer is yes. If it's not interesting, then maybe not.
I'm just sort of, I had a little confusion about the two symposia that I organized last year, but it occurs to me that we didn't put Kathy Sulick on at RSA. We put her on at ISBRA because Kathy was presenting a plenary talk on her morphology work, although she really didn't focus strongly on it. And I wonder if there are elements of a symposium between what you're describing and Kathy. We had Feng Zhou at RSA.
Right.
We don't have, we didn't have anything from the facial dysmorphology group in humans at either of the presentations, and I don't have a good sense of whether, I guess we'll find out on the clinical call, whether maybe there's an opportunity to put sort of an imaging presentation together, because although Elizabeth presented last year, I'm expecting that she'll have more stuff for this year. So maybe that's something to begin to think about, that you know, Feng did go last year. I don't know if it would be appropriate to have him do it again, but we didn't do anything from the human facial imaging, and maybe there's a potential imaging theme that we could put together. But let's start to think about that in the coming months until the December 6th deadline.
Okay.
Is Jennifer on?
Yeah, I'm on.
Okay, could you go ahead, please?
Well, I'm still waiting in terms of getting any data from Carl's group. You know, our project is kind of officially over, and that's kind of the last piece that we're waiting for. And I get emails whenever I check in, oh, yes, we're almost done, and I haven't seen any data. So I'm not sure what to do at this point. Make that process happen.
Yeah. In the emails, apart from the sort of eternal optimism that it's almost your turn, do you get projected dates or just, you know?
Yeah, occasionally I will. I mean, but I'm trying to remember the last one I got. It was going to be in a month or a couple months ago. So I'm open to suggestions of how to make that process work.
Are they getting dollars for this?
At this point, no. I mean, and that's, see, my project ended. I couldn't do any carryover, I don't have that as a leverage anymore.
Yeah. And how will they be paid for the assays when they do them?
Well, they were paid initially, and part of it, in terms of my budget and with Tina's budget, my part of it was a relatively small part, and they weren't getting paid when they were doing the blood analysis. So they've kind of gotten, I think, you know, paid part of the money that was going into that was from Tina's group in terms of getting the assays to be functioning appropriately.
Have they been paid for the work that you were asking them to do, or was that sort of all part of this larger infusion of.
They did get paid. They did get paid for the part of work that I had to do because again I couldn't have any carryover, and the budget was rather small.
Right.
As well. So.
So any suggestions?
It would be nice to know what's the holdup. They probably have a lot of, they're probably doing assays for a lot of people, I imagine, and get backlogged. But it may not be about money. It might be volume.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that that's been the big problem, and it's kind of been this kind of combination. Different times the things have broken down, but then they're working, and then it seems like their priority list shifts quite a bit.
Are there other alternative labs to do some of the assays for you?
Zizel's lab might be one option, and we're certainly going to hopefully be doing some collaboration in terms of looking at choline levels in blood, and so maybe I can get him to look at the tissue as well. I mean, the part of the problem, of course, the tissue is there in Carl's lab. We have some additional tissue where we've manipulated the different choline levels of the diet that we haven't sent to them. I mean, we sent part of it to them, but we still have some of that tissue. We could send that potentially to Zizel's lab if they would be willing to do that. But I might be able to do that waiting for to hear my grant. I might have some money to put toward that. But otherwise, I don't know what else to do. I mean, I nag. So.
I guess, have you actually called Carl?
I can try. I've talked to Jan. Carl's hard to catch, but I can try and talk to him. I can try that. Again, usually I talk to Jan, and she's the one that, and usually when I talk to Carl, he says, you know, talk to Jan. So,
right.
I'll try that and see what
even
I can.
Even though Carl isn't sequencing the order of assays to be done, and I'm sure has delegated that, sometimes it's just a way of getting somebody's attention.
Okay.
If you just call and say, this is really important, we need to finish these experiments and get them out, and it's been a long time, and we've already paid you for it, but nothing is happening. Sometimes they'll just call somebody and say, just, you know, get this done. And
okay.
Jennifer stops calling me.
So be a pain. I can do that.
Jennifer, who is Jan?
She's the one that's Uri Adams. She's the one that's actually running the assays. So she kind of runs the lab. She was at the CFAS meeting last year.
Okay. Is she a postdoc or is she
I think she's a staff person.
And is she
a major scientist?
Does she get a publication out of this?
She would. So
is that would that motivate her, or is that maybe not the issue?
Again, I don't think it's so much. I think the biggest issue is that they're just overloaded and overcommitted. Is my impression.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you've been waiting patiently and.
Yeah, and like I said, I keep contacting and Tina's had, you know, has also contacted them, but I'll give a call and actually try to call to Carl and to Jan and really.
Get some.
Just put more pressure on to see what we can get done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think calling Carl is probably the best thing to do, and just being pesky. It's always pesky because people like pesky people out of their lives.
Okay.
So,
you can only do that so many times.
Mm-hmm. Send them a Hewlett Packard printer. I mean, just, you know, be noticed.
All right, okay.
That's what I would do.
Okay.
Is there anybody else on who has not had an opportunity to present?
I'm on, but I don't really have much new to talk about. We're just trucking along trying to collect data from lots of different things.
Kathy, what's going on with your scanner? I know there were some technical issues for a while, or access issues.
Yeah, it melted down. It's what it's called, I can't even think of it.
Quenching?
Yes, it quenched.
Yeah.
Big time problems. So it set us back, I would say, by the time, so we couldn't scan any of the animals we had.
Yeah.
Doing a lot of long-term stuff, so we had to ditch a lot of animals and start over. I think it cost us close to 4 or 5 months.
Oh, that's terrible.
So, yeah, it was really bad, and it wasn't just us. Of course, it was Al's whole program. So, but he's back in business, and so we're perking along, you know, not knowing when it would be back. We didn't know exactly when to breed our animals, so, but we're doing that now, and so we're back on track.
That's great. That's painful, though.
Yeah.
I feel for you.
Yeah, wasn't good.
Yeah. Any others?
This is Jill. I did receive an email from Dr. Miranda that I can read to you guys in my best scientific voice, but
okay.
He said that I'd like to report that we are in the middle of analyzing plasma samples from offspring of mothers treated with ethanol for 3 trimesters, as well as samples from non-pregnant adult females. We are using qPCR arrays and should have all of the samples analyzed by the end of the next 2 weeks. After that, we will assess if we have enough data for a manuscript.
Very scientific.
Thank you.
You can read mine next.
Awesome.
Good. Okay. Any others? And any comments from the advisory board or from Dale?
I have no comments. Things seem to be going very well.
And Dan?
Only one for Tim. About the behavioral, the trending results, have we had a conversation about whether there are other perhaps, quote, more challenging, unquote, behavioral procedures that can be done in sheep that might tease out or clarify some things? You see, I just don't know in sheep, and I don't know what the options may be there, but I wondered, particularly with lower doses, if that may be an issue.
Yeah, well, we have explored that a little bit, and, we did some delay, and that seems to be too hard for all of them. So we have thought about what you said, and... Yeah, we're sort of at a crossroads. Again, we just now finished, as of Friday, collecting the last behavioral data from that half of an experiment. And, you know, we haven't really analyzed it, but just eyeballing it, it appears that our modification was a little too far. So, I think we may go back to the original protocol, and hope that the high dose next year will be successful.
It's always tricky titrating your protocol to maximize.
Yeah, the sheep.
It's hard in rats. I'm sure it's even more difficult in sheep. So.
You just can't batch through, keep batching them through to
right.
Find the sweet spot. You just have to take your educated guess and hope for the best. And it looks like we pushed it a little too far on this, on our attempt.
All righty.
Yeah, this is Dale. I just wanted to kind of echo my support for what Michael was suggesting for an RSA symposium, something maybe that integrates dysmorphology and facial features. I really enjoyed last summer's symposium. It was more rangy, in topics from microRNAs to, neurodevelopmental profiles. And I think in the end, it wasn't possible to write up a mini review, out of that. But I think if, a tighter, more integrated group of talks on things that are either, published or on the verge of being published, I think would be good and would allow for, the generation of a mini review. And I think it would also show people the integrated nature of the work in a very clear way at a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I'd be willing to contribute.
So maybe we'll carry that suggestion to the clinical group and see if somebody there is willing to put pieces together for this as well. I think that there is a benefit that Dale has described, as well as a liability to being too focused, and that is the potential breadth of interest that something heavily focused on facial dysmorphology might have for a group as broad as RSA. So I think it would be important to have some hooks for other members besides those who worry specifically about facial dysmorphology in FASD, because it might not prove to be of sufficiently wide interest to make the program committee excited about it. That's, I think, always the challenge, is that sometimes what lends itself to a very nice and comprehensive focused review may end up being too narrow for the larger membership to really get excited about. But I think we can certainly entertain those considerations as we look for a really good topic.
Yeah, I guess another angle would be something like new diagnostic tools.
Right. So that, then we need
RNAs could come back in, or face, or it leaves it more wide open, I guess.
So maybe a Ken Jones introductory talk of some sort that would allow us to sort of bring in a wider group, and then show going from the sort of broad diagnostic challenges to the specific approaches that CFAS is taking in looking at facial dysmorphology, but having something that casts a much wider net.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's keep talking about that. I think that is potentially important and maybe a good way to represent stuff this year that we didn't just show last year.
And this is deadline in a month?
It is, which is actually pretty soon, because
it's December 6th, and then it's the next conference call for this group is December 7th. So if you guys need help with a special conference call, either with more basic science folks or with the joint group, I'm happy to help coordinate that.
I'm just looking. So it looks like November 12th is our CFAS clinical.
Right.
Maybe we should do a little organizing in between, just because that is...
Well, maybe we can recap what we talked about this morning, and I can send out another email with that deadline and asking clinical people who are interested, and maybe have a call from there.
Yep, that's the way to go.
I think if we're going to do stuff on facial imaging, it might be really good to ask Peter Hammond to present.
If he can come, I think it would be great, because his stuff is really, it's certainly entertaining to watch those morphing pictures.
Yeah, and I think he can really put it into the perspective of dysmorphology in general.
Yeah.
He can talk about other syndromes, and, they have their characteristic features in it, and it just makes it a little broader for the audience.
So we have potentially Ken Jones. None of these people, of course, know we're talking about them. Peter Hammond, and maybe Tim, depending on data and all the rest, and then Elizabeth Moore's group, Elizabeth Moore, Tatiana Farooz. We can ask them to... Who would be the person, Fung, who you think would be able to best represent the human side of the facial work?
Tatiana?
Yeah. So let me do this. Let me just me run this by Ed and see how we can do this. We're going to need somebody to organize it from within that group. And Tatiana might be the best bet. She's kind of a busy person, but... let me think about this offline, but I think that's a potential interesting grouping. Tim ends up being the sort of representative of basic science in the progression last year, Fung was, and it was the same approach where we had Fung stuff followed by Elizabeth Sowell and to some extent Sarah Mattson. But that may be one way to go. So I'll send a few emails around after the meeting and see if we can get the discussion going on that.
And then just to follow up, Dr. Hammond and the gentleman who's been doing work with him, Mike Sudi, will both be at the winter meeting.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. And you don't know if they're going to plan to be at RSA, do you?
I don't know that, but they're very responsive over email. So if you ask them, they'll get back to you right away.
Yeah. Okay.
Or when we want to ask them, they'll get back to us right away. I'm happy to help with that.
I'll run some of this by Ed also and just see what looks best for this.
Great.
Good. Any others? If not, then we have one more meeting before the winter meeting. Is that right, Jill?
Yes, on the 7th of December, so a day after RSA deadline.
Great. Okay, so we'll see you all then. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye. Bye.